everybody. Welcome to the Mystical Mother Earth Show. I'm a little miscombobulated, but my name is Golden Hawk. I'm delighted that everybody's here. Please help me welcome my co-host, Janine. Janine Kimmel, to the show. Welcome to the show, Janine.
Hello. Hello. I'm here, too. It's good to be here. And I don't know. We'll see what happens tonight, right?
Yeah, well, the chat room just went out right before we go live on the air, you know.
That's all right.
Nothing like dangling a little technological issues right before a show starts. So, yeah, I'm not quite sure. I'm actually going to close my chat room out, and it's open. So,
yeah.
Okay. Yes. What I would like to do is I would like to tell everybody that there are definitely there's some issues going on with an echo, and I just want to let everybody know if you hear the echo. You'll have to be in the chat room, but let us know if you hear the echo. I really want to know if that's happening, because it's been happening to me on the last two shows that I've done, and I don't know if this is solar flares or truly what this is, but I would like to know that when it's happening. Also, the second thing I'd like to say is, go ahead. I just want to let people know.
it could be the two towers from the Lord of the Rings. Remember what I was saying?
Listen, it could be anything at this point. You know, really, it's anyone's guess what's happening on the planet right now. And we're just here to, you know, kind of report that. We're reporting what's happening, but it's not that we have, you know, any rhyme or reason to, you know, it's just a witnessing of what's happening, but letting go and surrendering to what's happening. The other thing I want to let people know is if you play the show in your default player, it tends to not drop off as often. It tends to hold the connection stronger. So those are the two technological things. My chat room's back up, so hopefully this will all run smoothly. But you know what? One of the things I'm clearly getting in this particular week and in the energy of this week, I want things to run smoothly because that's where I am right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm in a space where, you know, me and Janine are sharing tremendous insights that we're getting with each other privately. And then, of course, you know, coming onto the show, you know, happy to continue to share these insights with the audience. But one of the insights that is coming up, like, you know, from the recognition of, you know, the last couple of shows having the echo issue, you know, we can worry about these things that are, you know, kind of tripping us up in our everyday lives or, you know, things that are, you know, putting apparent glitches in the way we want things to function.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll speak for myself, when I sit with it, there really is a greater gift in the sitting with the situation and learning to accept it completely and not be, you know, not get totally mind warped around things I can't change and things that are part of the experience, and not just, of course, being on the radio, but in life itself. It seems that the magic that's afoot right now is very much, you know, it's almost like the magic happens in the twinkling of an eye. And if we continue to just play these tapes in our head about, you know, well, this is the way, expectations of what we want, or
uh-huh.
Controlling the outcome of how we want things to be in our life, it's like you miss that subtle point in the magic, which when you hit that subtle point of the magic, it's like you go into a completely different time-space dimension. It's not just a moment of magic. It's in that moment, everything is magical. But the getting connected back into that moment of magic really requires the witness, what we were speaking about a few weeks ago. The mind is all about the agenda. The mind has goals. The mind sets points of destination. And it's traveling over that moment of magic. You know, it is not even looking for that moment of magic. It is really in the true surrendering of the mind that the soul and all these nuances and these subtleties, which in the world of the mind seem very small, but when you drop into this space, it's becoming very apparent to me that it's not that it's very big, but it's like being dropped momentarily into the new reality that I know intuitively it's where I'm headed. Instead of experiencing it only for, you know, trickles of moments, the more I drop into these magical spaces, the more it's becoming more, my body is acclimating whatever the atmosphere of the magical space is, because it is so very different than the mind's creation of what I'm trying to make my life be. I mean, it's so funny, because it comes back to turning everything upside down from the space of, you know, success was such a different form to me, you know, than what I consider myself successful in right today. You know, my growing up, what I thought success was going to be for me, and, you know, going through my 30s, what I thought success, you know, and success has always been, I think, something, especially in our age group, you know, from 30 to 60, you know, it tends to be the focus of the American journey, you know, successfully, you know, having a career, successfully raising a family, successfully being in a successful relationship. And all of these avenues are taking tremendously different forms than what I thought they were. What I thought was success is not what I'm experiencing, but what I'm experiencing is the success of the soul, which really is experienced very differently. Like, one of the things I have to share, me and Janine have kind of been on David Icke kick all day. We've been listening to David Icke, and he's just fabulous. He just improves with age, even though what we were listening to today and yesterday was recorded in 2009. But one of the things he said that is really, I understand and I resonate with, is he speaks about in part three, which you'll hear tomorrow, about how for him, when he was speaking about these things 30 years ago, he went through a period in his life, and so did his wife and his children, where he was major, major ridiculed.
Yeah.
I mean, he brought he brought all the wisdom he's bringing out today, which is it was truly the truth out of its own time. He was ahead of his time. And he brought up how, you know, did it feel good when he would stop at a red light and people in the car would just look at him and laugh? And, you know, he goes, he would hear radios, people on the radio, all they would have to do is bring up the name David Icke, and they would laugh. You know, there really was a true, it almost feels like a conspiracy to just mock him to no end for years. And he said in his talk in 2009 that it was difficult to go through that, but what he recognized today, or at least in 2009, is that it disconnected him from the very severe matrix of caring about what other people think.
Yeah.
Like, how, and you know, there's really a profundity when he said that, because I am by no means comparing myself to David Icke, and David Icke is, you know, he's beautiful. I mean, he is, you know, he's deeply, he knows his work. And I guess in that perspective, I truly believe I've gone deep into my awarenesses, and I know what I'm talking about. And the truth is, I've reached a point where I really don't care if people talk about me either. I mean, I've had friends say to me, you know, and this is throughout my whole, you know, my teens, 20s, 30s, you know, they would talk about me. And see, that part never really, I never cared about that, because I've always just had this rebellious thing that it's like, no, I know the truth that I'm speaking is real. And there was just a part of me that I really didn't care that anybody wasn't on board with it. I had to speak it. But what I have found, my disconnect, and I just got this recently, and this is what I was going to tell you, Janine, earlier in the day when we were talking about my conversation with my brother, but I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
And what I totally got was, in the past, I'd say probably pretty much, I'd say about between 7 to 10 years, my physical body has changed. And it was very much, you know, a challenge for me to be, I was skinny my whole life. I mean, my whole life, I was skinny. And then when I was in my 30s, I worked out with a personal trainer and did the whole, okay, let's shape up our bodies with muscles. And I got that too. And, you know, and now I'm very much, you know, I'm a size 12 or 14. I've got a big old pregnant belly looking belly. And it was so interesting, because I was talking to my brother the other day, and I said to him, you know, what's really amazing about who I am now is, I go, I'm not trying to be in the world through the world of beauty. Mm-hmm. And it's been like kind of sinking in and dropping into my being that, see, because the beauty world is the matrix world. And, you know, it's like, I read articles like Lady Gaga gained 25 pounds, and they had a picture of her in People magazine where she definitely looked heavy. I mean, and she, you know, when she's thin, she is like a little stick. And she said, I'm not going to apologize for my weight. She's like, the industry expects me to starve myself.
Right.
And so what's been happening with me since I've been consciously tracking what's going on for me, I'm so getting that because my body's metabolism changed, because I'm not naturally, I mean, I was naturally thin when I was a kid. I could eat whatever the hell I wanted, and it just, I didn't gain weight. And now it's funny, because it's not like I eat and then I'm going to get obese. It's just my natural center of weight went from being 100 pounds to 180 pounds. I mean, I don't seem to move off of that. No matter whether I eat all week or, you know, there are days where I don't feel like eating. You know what I mean? Meaning it's, I'm not maintaining this through counting calories or you know, only eating greens and raw. And I mean, that's just not the way I fly. I just don't do it. But what I am clearly getting is that I have rewired myself that where when I was in the world and I needed confirmation of who I was based on my looks, which I was. I mean, I would do my hair, I would tan, I would do my nails. I mean, I would put a tremendous amount of energy into how I looked. I mean, as my brother put it, and he goes, and you were pretty good at it. And I was like, and you know, I was. I was far from a knock 'em out dead kind of person, but I could turn heads. I knew I could turn heads. And the truth is, so I don't, at this point, I don't, not only do I not mind being invisible when I'm walking in Fairfield County, which is a very much a county base. It's essentially the East Coast Beverly Hills. You know, it's all about looks. But what I'm getting is that I can attract attention, and I see it in my interactions with people on everyday life. I'm attracting attention based on presence. And presence doesn't have me in 6-inch heels that are bad for my back.
Mm.
Presence doesn't have me squeezing into a pair of jeans and an underwire bra that is, I mean, well, when you look at that from the comfort level, I can remember I used to go, I sacrifice comfort for looks. I used to say that all the time in my wardrobe, in what I wore. And you start really understanding, and what's unfolding for me so clearly is the beauty and fashion industry, the entertainment industry, and the athletic industry are all three industries that very much set a standard, especially in our culture, set a standard for what we set our goals. I want to be a movie star, a rock star. I want to be a model. Or the boys might be going, you know, I want to be Michael Jordan. I want to be an athlete or a football player. You know, but when I track the energy in clarity, all three of those industries are so anti-life. I mean, the modeling industry is all about heroin and cocaine, keeping the girls awake and not eating. I mean, that you don't have to watch, you know, too many biographies of models to get that. You know, they at every model party, they're passing out drugs like, you know, their candy, because they literally don't want you to eat. I mean, that, let's be clear on that. Let's hear that. We don't want you to eat food. You starve so you look good in our clothes. And the entertainment industry, same thing. It's anorexic and bulimia, because the minute you gain weight, you don't look, you know, the TV puts 10 pounds on you. We can't have that. You know, and what's so interesting is how we set our standards that, you know, this is my goal, is I need to lose 10 pounds in life. You know, I 20 pounds, this is not me. So, meaning I hear people say this, you know, I've got to lose weight. What, so who will accept you? Who are we losing the weight for? Society? Society who makes 300-pound football players play on a concrete carpet? You know, I mean, this is clearly not a society that has, quote-unquote, the human being's health and well-being as the number one priority. They, you know, football players get, they literally took out of a number of stadiums the grass because it was cheaper to do artificial turf. But then these guys are literally playing on concrete fields, tackling at full speed. I mean, that, when you look at that from the tracking point of view, you start getting a clarity of going, what is going on? What's motivating my choices in life? These are the questions me and Janine ask ourselves. And this is the element that I want to speak of, the clarity of why things happen. Because when you watch, if you watch David Icke, and I'll post it in the chat room, when you watch David Icke talk about this in the third part, where he really, you can feel it empathically, the torment, the level of torment he was subjected to for years and years, talking about reptilians and talking about shape shifting and you know, he went after the elite, you know, and to hear him say, I wouldn't change that for anything. It's like, because he literally goes, there's a saying in Japan, you don't want to be, you don't want to be the nail that sticks out, because that will be the one that gets pounded the most. So in other words, they're telling you through that cultural saying, don't be unique, don't stand out, and he's standing on the stage and he goes, I got pounded for years. Look how good I am, and not look how good, look how I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And it was like the people who have taken the poundings and survived the poundings, because they really did recognize it as, it's the building of our character. It's the connection to our soul. It's the diminishing of the artificial patterns of energy. I mean, David, I clearly couldn't live off of his stardom, so to speak, you know, in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, when his stardom was based on ridicule. You know, he wasn't walking red carpets, but he didn't stop talking about his truth. I mean, he wrote these books and had these experiences and was following a very clear trail of synchronicity. Because the truth is, it was inside him. He knew that this information was truth, and it needed to come out. It's like I would imagine it's what the chick feels like when they finally break out of the egg, or shit, what we feel like when we get born, where you know we're just too big for the womb, and it's just, you know, there's a freedom that happens with that. And I think it's important to speak of, because I think, I'm going to say even deeper, I feel that what's happening to all of us right now from an energetic, conscious frequency point of view is we're all getting pounded. And the question is, so what are you going to do with that pounding? Are you going to recognize it to be, you know, your soul saying to you, hey, listen, what's real about you? What's authentic? Are you trying to fit in? Are you trying to fit in with everybody else so that you're part of the group and you're liked? And then I'll ask you one simple question. You know, because most of us have been doing that for most of our lives. That's the conditioning. So if you're trying to fit in with your family or whatever group it is that you're trying to fit in, how's that working for you?
Yeah.
Like, really take a look at yourself. Are you feeling good about where you are? What, you know, putting all this energy into dieting and, like me and Janine spoke briefly. We spoke briefly about a topic, and then I definitely want you to share, Janine. We spoke about how me and Janine we don't do small talk. We don't call people up, and if they want to talk about the shoes they bought or, you know, the new car, or I don't know. I don't even know what small talk is because I don't know. Like, in other words, when me and Janine get on the phone together, and this is pretty much me with anybody, because I just want to go immediately into, okay, so what's going on in your world, and what are you aware of right now? What have you integrated? It's like I want to talk about what's deeply bothering you and pissing you off in life, and I don't want to talk about that because I want to make you feel bad. I want to talk about it because I want to talk about what's deeply bothering me, and maybe what's deeply bothering you, I'll get an insight in how you're handling it as a way that I want to handle it, because I know that who I am in life from the matrix point of view, I have a choice.
Yeah.
I do not have to be 47 years old trying to get the same energetic feeding that I got effortlessly at 20. At 20, I could wear certain clothes and I could get the attention of men and women alike. Okay, now I can't get that attention. Okay, so does that make me now, I have no value now? So what's the next level of life that's coming my way? Well, the next level of life that's coming my way is the journey that goes within and says, am I paying attention to me? Can I give myself that which I have looked for the outside world to give me my whole life? And the answer unequivocally is absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, these are important directions to track. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, when we were talking today, I could feel, and I had verbalized it to you, how much fun it is to talk with you because, you know, I get to, this is my natural place and to discuss this kind of, process and, it's like being able to talk to an artist or a writer when, you know, you're sort of haven't had a chance to, and, you know, you feel this resonance. And I also felt this, I felt this sensation of kind of going further on the edge of my awareness, and it was really fun and interesting to me. Like, I literally got off the phone today, and it's not a first time at all, but I could tell that we had gone to, we had just gone deep into a conversation where it was like two explorers, and we had kind of gone to the edge of where we, you know, where we've been so far. And that for me is really fun. And, you know, it's what I love to do. I mean, it may not be what everyone loves to do, but it's what I love to do, and it's a natural place for me. But, and
right.
for you, and
me
so
too.
We enjoy it, and you can feel that, you know. And, but, you know, today there, I had sort of a, you know, a moment of a quote, of getting this subject deeper where, you know, this magazine, Publisher Weekly, came out, and they sent it to me in the mail, and I saw that my book was listed in there, and, you know, I thought, oh, maybe they reviewed it, you know, and you're looking, this is sort of the looking for approval and inclusion kind of thing. And, you know, and I was like, and then I realized, no, they didn't pick it to review it. They just listed it as, you know, a book that's out, which still was, you know, great. But, I really read the reviews they had written, and I went, they feel weird. They just, and then I saw the little caption to describe my book that they didn't write, but it's, and it just says, an illustrated and complex tale of unconditional love, courage, perseverance, and forgiveness. And I go, Janine, what else is there to say? That's perfect. I'm like, that is.
You didn't tell me that earlier today.
Well, they didn't come up with that. That is a description that comes with, like, if, you know, you put your book in, into a publication.
Oh, I see.
Right.
But,
you know, I haven't read that in months. So, like, I kind of forgot that was the description of the book. And I went,
right.
And this is what I'm saying. I go to myself, I go, and you heard me saying this earlier, but then this was even more later. I was like, do you see how perfect it really is showing up? You don't, why are you even concerned about, like, my work, my book, it knows where it's going. Why am I even trying to pre-plan its destiny? It doesn't matter. It's like it already has, you know, the energy of all the unconditional love, perseverance, courage, forgiveness. I said, you know, why don't you just trust that? And, you know, so I was learning a lesson again of my own. And then this was so perfect. So then I was very grateful for this quiet day, and I have two more, you know, where I'm like, I really need this, you know. And so I was happy to turn on David Icke, and first things out of his mouth were, just keep going. Don't give up. You know, this accumulates. You don't even know why you're doing what you're doing, and it doesn't matter, but eventually it all starts to make sense and you actually get somewhere. And I really feel that. It's like even discussing with you, like, you know, I write books, I make art, I have a therapy practice, I do all these things, and it's like you just keep going because there's something moving you, and it really, you do start to see all this beautiful synchronicity of how it's all coming together. And you know, and so his words right away, I was like, wow. I mean, it was the first 4 seconds. I was like,
Isn't that a wonderful feeling when that happens?
Right. I was like,
keep
going. And the way he said it, because if anyone's going to listen, it's even better because it's very, you know, it's someone who's walked before me and Goldie in a place of courage and living outside of the mainstream, obviously, which is what I do, which is what Goldie does. And I really do enjoy hearing this from people who have had the courage and the perseverance.
Absolutely.
And you know, and so, yeah, and also here is another moment. Okay, so, and, you know, Goldie will love this, but he was showing kind of the pyramid of how power works, and it works from the top down. And the whole idea is at the top is that if you can keep the knowledge of the bigger picture hidden from the masses and you keep it at the top, it therefore keeps people, you know, ignorant or
right.
Okay, so right away, what pops into my head? I go, oh, that's why I love Frederick Douglass's story so much, because Frederick Douglass knew that information was his freedom. He knew that knowledge was his freedom. And see, so Frederick Douglass's story is such a beautiful, powerful, incredible story about, you know, perseverance and you know, self, and, you know, just a complete self-freedom. And yes, he had help along the way. And I always say yes to help because I believe in it. But I just saw how attaining and going for knowledge that may not be, you know, everyone else will be like, what are you doing? Or what do you, it doesn't matter. That knowledge to me is so freeing and liberating to who we really are, who I really am. And it's so interesting that he must have emphasized, oh, I don't know, in the two parts that I got to see today, he must have emphasized at least 10 times how we're eternal beings, we're infinite beings. And that's something
right.
that George says, and that's something that I started really thinking to myself. You know, all your life you might hear these things said where, you know, whether, and you know, and all of a sudden you realize that considering that you're an infinite being, that I'm an infinite being, completely starts to rumble and roll and shake the apple cart up so that you really can't live in this ignorant place anymore, and how important it is to ask the questions and to present those things to yourself, because it will really, just by considering and contemplating that you're an infinite being, you immediately start disrupting the buying into every ridiculous, you know, celebrity thing, and this is how I'm supposed to be, and this is actually who I am, and, you know, you're born, and then this is what's happening, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then you die. And that's the most ridiculous, it's the most
right.
ridiculous, you know, fiction, really, but it's fiction with a purpose because it keeps people prisoner. And so, you know, I just, all this stuff fits together when you start hearing it from here and there, and, you know, it's things that I've been considering for quite a while, but it just seems to me like it's really sinking in, it's really making sense, and, you know, it's the Frederick Douglass in me. I'm freeing myself, you know.
That's exactly right, though.
Right.
I mean, that's no lie. You are freeing yourself. And,
yeah,
and just as Frederick Douglass had to get, you know, remember he tried to free himself one time and he got caught by his masters and, you know, had the shit kicked out of him and he was whipped and, you know.
Oh, I mean, that's, you know.
It was not an easy journey.
No, in society on another level, not literally perhaps because this, you know, that was then with slavery, but we're talking about, you know, the society constraints and the society disapproval that, you know, I mean, there's just no turning back and it's just absolutely ridiculous. And you start to feel this, you know, for me, information and knowledge is freeing, just like for Frederick Douglass, it got him out of being a slave. And so, you know, that's a thing that really popped in, and I was, of course, when I'm watching these, I'm like, oh, I got to tell Goldie that, you know, and
I love it.
it just so happens we're doing the show tonight, so, you know,
and I love that we watched it, because so much pertinent information, like, because I love that, okay, so for Frederick Douglass, reading and writing, mm-hmm. that was the tool, because, and white people had even said, there was a couple that taught Frederick Douglass, the woman taught Frederick Douglass how to read, which was, the interesting part about it was, she teaches him how to read, and her husband says to Frederick Douglass, or says to the woman in front of Frederick Douglass, don't teach him how to read, he'll realize his own freedom if you do
that. Yeah, his own power.
His own power, and it's like, that's the trick of, because information, especially, I mean, David Icke's information not only has clearly lasted the test of time, it's being October 15th, or is that what today is?
Yeah.
I think
it
is. Being October 15th, 2012, where we, not only can feel the energy, like I was telling Janine that me and Scott have we spend some time outside together while he does his astrophotography. He blows me up a bed and we put, you know, like three blankets on it, and I get my my hiking stuff, where I get my little neck pillow out, and you know, so I'm not just spending time in the forest per se during the day. I'm actually experiencing Mother Nature at night, which is a different experience, but truly just as powerful. But it's funny because the silence of the night strikes me differently. In my awareness, it's almost like strumming different awareness chords than the silence I get from the day, and it's hard to explain. It's just experiential. But what I got last night, it was a beautiful 60 degrees. There was not a cloud in the sky. Scott got amazing pictures of Andromeda, the Andromeda galaxy. Yeah, I'll share them, and they're just the first draft. He has this camera that can actually layer pictures, but it's so amazing how I'm expanding awareness. Scott is doing it through the eyes of a telescope, through his passion, but it's so synchronistic, the dance, because I told him last night how much I loved being outside with, you know. He was doing his thing, I was doing my thing, and, you know, he was like, you know, I love being with you too, babe. And I was like, you know, I prayed for a reason for me and Scott to be outside together. Because he's very, you know, he's out there with his telescopes and his laptop computers to, you know, track the stars. But he is outside, and I'm outside with him. And it was like, it was just such a, there was a beautiful moment shared between three of us, Mother Nature, me, and Scott, you know. And, it's funny because I tend to resonate deeply with the earth, and he resonates with the sky and, you know, the galactic aspect of our infiniteness.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I got in the clarity of just because I lately, since October, I mean, and hands down, everybody, something significant shifted in October. Everyone is feeling it. Well, everyone that I'm talking to anyway. So, yeah, and I realize that is a small population. But what I was feeling last night just lying there, I could actually track it. And like this is my big thing now, tracking myself, was I could feel a pulse that it would come through my right hand. About every minute to minute and 20 seconds, about there, I would feel a four-second burst of energy through my hand. It would just be like a bzzz. But there were times where if I put my hand, like, on my heart or on my belly, and I was consciously focusing on the radiant being within myself, my light body, my radiant being body, when that pulse would happen, my hand would get, or the area in my right hand would get super hot, like significantly hot. It felt like I was blowing on the embers of a fire that, you know, might have, you know, most of it, you know, the big flare of the fire was burned out, and it was at the ember part. And, you know, when you blow on it, it goes from orange to like a yellow. It changes its intensity. So focusing on my radiant being was changing the intensity of this pulse. And I'm finding that, you know, the nature herself, and this is not, and it's not just Mother Nature, life is infusing our, and it's so funny because David confirmed all this. I love that I get this information, and then the great minds, in my humble opinion, on this planet who do great work confirm. Because it's just like George has always said. George basically, his wisdom is profound, but he doesn't get it from books or from channelers, or he doesn't get it from other people. He gets it from his own connection to that which is him, the infinite aspect, the him being aware of him in all spaces. That's what's available, and the opportunity that all of us have when we let go of the limited space of our mind. Because I heard a clear, like kind of cliche saying in the forest the other day, and I put it, you know, on my phone so I'd remember to talk about it. And it was that losing my mind allows me to feel more and care less about what other people think of me. Because the wisdom is not about, you know, my whole life I've always had this sense that when I show up, you know, over somebody's house, or, you know, when I show up somewhere, I can feel that, and I've felt this my whole life, that I have a big energy. It's not even something, I've had this since I was a kid. But what I have learned through being a kid and being a teenager and in my 20s, I basically learned people they didn't want my energy to be big. And because I didn't know how to be big gracefully, I ended up bumping up against people that, you know, like big energies create, you know, I didn't get my ass kicked. I got my ass kicked by several people at once. And they weren't just enjoying the fight. They would be tripping on acid enjoying the fight. You know, there was, I say that because I really do get that there was intense things. My energy was very intense, but I had no idea who my energy was, how it was. And so what it essentially taught me in my, you know, my 20s, which I then adapted by the time I was 30, was keep it small, Goldie. Keep it small so you don't get hurt. And what's happening from this pulse that, in my humble opinion, is coming through the galactic center right now, which, by the way, I also think it's hitting the entire galaxy, because we're actually very much on the outer rim of the galaxy. So it's not like you have to be in the center. We're nowhere near in the center. We're very much towards the outer rim. So that means if we're feeling it, the whole galaxy is feeling it. But this pulse is bringing back to balance the essence of power, like Janine's book, what it's all about. The essence and the power of presence, which has no opposite. It has the strength of presence is simply the total acceptance that you can be different. And that is a beautiful thing. It's not, I need you to be on my side to fight my battles with me. It's so funny because I'm becoming very clear and having an ability on some level to articulate the mind experience versus the soul's experience and consciousness experience. And I do believe that this is something that, because I'm tracking myself, because I'm willing to look at my entire experience from self, you know, anybody that talks to me, one of the reasons why I like talking to other people, you know, it's never about, you know, it's like I can be triggered by, now I get it. If I'm triggered by somebody, I don't want to talk to them because the trigger has now made me go, you know, I don't feel good. But all my friends who know that, you know, we talk to, it's like I'm always talking to them. It's like, okay, well, I got triggered. This is inside me, you know. Okay, so what do I need to do? I need to accept it. Like, see, everybody should have a Janine in their life because Janine is somebody that truly does understand the nature of the journey back to self. And that nature is understanding that the torque, the triggers, the uncomfortableness, that is an extraordinary necessity. We cannot get back to the wholeness of self if we eliminate that aspect of the game. It just can't be done. And in fact, what I'm so clearly getting in October is that, oh, why would you want to? It's like it has an intelligence in it, the intelligence of being uncomfortable, the intelligence of feeling the pain of feeling abandoned or unloved, or, and it is an exquisite intelligence. But of course, this is where the mind comes into it from a divine mind, because the divine mind is telling me, you're feeling uncomfortable because you're programmed energetically to feed from competition. Like, one of my trackings is clear. I'm a competitive person, and I'm not just competitive like playing a pool game or playing sports. I'm competitive in life. And that is part of the conditioning. My wires have been conditioned where that's how I would go out and feed in the world. Similar to, I go out and I eat, you know, I eat sugar things and I eat candies and cookies. My program is get the sweetness from the food. And what I'm learning through my conversations with Janine, who is so aware of the value of those uncomfortable feelings and uncomfortable emotions, is that they bring a wisdom with it that it is just, it's magical. It is fucking magical what the accepting of those things are, because I'm finally able to get big again, but I'm big in a way that I'm not afraid of. Here's the irony. I'm not afraid of being humble. I'm not afraid of being wrong. I'm not afraid of making a mistake. And it sounds like, oh, okay, well, you know, well, those are the negatives. It's like, yeah, but it's our fear of those negatives keeps us in arguments, holds grudges, keeps us separated. There's this amazing thing that happens in the dark side of strength, and it's transforming, and it's exquisite. It's exquisite, and I'm living it as we speak. And
yeah,
I'm having a grand time.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because when you were speaking, and literally that 4 seconds before you said the word, what popped into my head too was that it is an inner intelligence that, you know,
yes.
Like, for instance, your story, and everybody can relate to that, where, you know, the most people, you know, don't want you to be big or get big or be your big self. And so there is this sort of, you know, game or where you play yourself down, you hide, you keep yourself small. But then what ends up happening is that is so uncomfortable. And so, you know, it's so incongruent and against who you are that it becomes uncomfortable. But the discomfort is the intelligence that's letting you know. And, you know, and often with, I mean, it's only from my own personal, you know, self of being uncomfortable in either extended periods of times or moments where if you stay with it, you end up really in a place of wisdom and seeing the perfection of, you know, what that discomfort was about. And then also you end up knowing that most everything that we've been told is completely the opposite and upside down, because most people are afraid of those feelings and they run away from them, and they really are turning against our own intelligence, when in fact I'm saying no, those are your best friends. These are what, you know, these are the voices you want to bring in, pay attention to, because this is all about freeing yourself, coming into your own, you know, and it is, you know, I mean society and culture and family structures, you know, there's always these dynamics going on. And I think that, you know, like the description of my story in one sentence, it really made an impression on me that I must have wrote that, I don't know, maybe like 8 months ago. But even using the word a complex, you know, because you realize, you know, this is complex. I mean, and this is why, you know, staying with something, it gives you clarity. It's not a quick in and out thing. It's not like, you know, an impatience. Gee, when am I going to get it? Because I've had enough of this. It's like, David Icke is a real example of that. Where
he really,
you know, there are times when you really don't know why you're staying with something. You're like, what is going on? What am I doing? And yet, it's, you know, it could be years later. You're going, oh wow. there it is. There's that why I stayed, and you know, it makes sense now, and it's I love that too, because you know, there's the humbleness part, but also you talked about being, you know, we're on sort of the edge of the galaxy. We're not necessarily the center. And, you know, just today I was feeling, and I told you, I'm going, it's right. Like I'm on the edge. It's like my consciousness has gone to its knowable place, and I'm just really close now to the unknowable, which will then become the knowable, because there's more for me to know. And,
right.
I said to you, and, you know, what I've come after these years is to actually be okay in the unknowable, or the not knowing, because that is a place. You know,
that's a vast place.
We run away from that a lot, or we fill up our calendar or dance card, so to speak, or, you know, and, you know, these are the places you come upon when you allow for that space. So, you know,
right.
And David Icke, again, another validation which I loved was, he said, when you ask the questions, the big ones, you know, who am I, why are we here, what are we doing, they actually are, for me, they're taps on the shoulders to whoever that is that knows the answer in us, or if the answer's out there, that you're actually asking.
It is in self.
It's very
it is
important
in self.
To ask. You know,
yeah.
You know, and I was talking to Goldie how, you know, I'm probably a big force too, because most of my time I'm literally, I may be like doing what I do every day, but I'm also in that place of, what are we doing? What's going on? Who are we? Where are we? What's, you know, and that's not an easy place maybe for sometimes people to be around, you know, that I have that underlying wanting to know, and my curiosity is it's active.
Well, it's being stretched, you know, because
right,
I'm honestly, when I'm around
person.
Yeah, no, right on. When I'm around George Kavassalis and around on the phone with him,
right,
I'm challenged. I mean,
right.
I'm literally, I can feel it. There's an uncomfortableness. I definitely know that I make people uncomfortable in the same way that if they haven't gone within themselves to start understanding who they are to the depth that I've gone, and that's not a...
No, it's just
that's an observation. This is not a judgment.
Yeah.
I said, the reason why I know how it feels is because George Kavassalis has gone deeper into his level of awareness of aspects of himself than I've gone, and I can feel it, you know, being on the phone with him for, you know, 4 or 4.5 hours when we do the interviews. And,
right, right.
I mean, I'm literally affected for 3 days afterwards because there's a stretch to us. You know, it's so interesting because, you know, like my whole gig, so to speak, between the show and my life, and it's not like there's much of a line. The show really is just talking about my life.
Right.
But the whole point of it is truly that, you know, I desire freedom from the matrix. I was telling Janine, in part one of David's talk, he talks about these books called Animorph.
Mm.
And it's a series of books written by somebody named Mace, I think, M-A-C-E. You can Google them. I found them online. Somebody had downloaded them for free. There's like 40 or 50 of these, like they're like short stories, but they're kind of long. They're essentially about an alien technology and an alien conspiracy of aliens have come to this planet and they're looking to basically enslave us and kill off the rest of the species that don't, they only want to keep the plants and animals that keep the human physical body alive, but they are embodying us through our brains, through these worms in our brains to inevitably go out and they're like taking over the universe. They're inhabiting worlds all over the universe. And these five kids connected with an alien who died on planet Earth, who is a species that has the ability to fight this other negative species, and I won't say negative, but parasitical species, and they do it through the power of morphing, and they can morph into anything they touch, any kind of DNA from an animal, including human beings, by the way. They can morph from the DNA that they put their hands on. And it's so funny because when David Icke is talking about this in his talk, he's going, they call me crazy, and they're giving these books out to American school children as, you know, as part of what needs to be read. So it's interesting because when I first, I didn't know what prompted me, but as I was listening to David, I was like, I want to go check out these books. Let me see if I can find one. And when I found them online, I'm fascinated with them. And, you know, see, now this is where, you know, being authentic and having some presence of self. Now, David Icke basically shares that, you know, these are the negative agenda, the alien agenda selling in these books. I mean, that's kind of how I took it anyways. But that doesn't stop me from reading it. You know, it's like, because, see, in my humble opinion, there's no information that can hurt me, even if it's the agenda. You know, shit, I did cocaine for 12 years. Clearly I'm not afraid to dive into the dark. And there, just like where David understood that the ridicule he went through ended up serving him, I now understand how diving into the dark with the cocaine served me.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that all of us have gone on a journey into the separation and the darkness one way or another, whether it was through relationships, whether it was through our focus being on, you know, rock stars and money and fame and fortune and, you know, that kind of stuff. And there's no shame in that, none whatsoever. But if it's time to leave the matrix, you've got to learn how to take those experiences and make them blessings, make them part of your understanding of self-empowerment. You can't have it both ways. You can't leave the matrix and still follow the matrix from the point of view of, like, you know, like there's well, let me put it this way. Sometimes these are hard things to talk about, but okay. See, for me, the soul coming into my body, like it, what I've been noticing lately with the tracking, my soul coming into my body, the soul is a non-physical experience. And so my body is a physical experience. So I say to myself, well, how does a non-physical experience come into a physical experience? It's going to become physical. So how is it going to become physical? Well, the soul becomes the motivation of my behaviors. Because the soul is what, my soul is what's helping me see, and consciousness is helping me see that I used to smoke cigarettes and say, oh, I feel so much better. I mean, I'd be totally stressed out, and I'd be like, I need a cigarette. I need it to relax me. Okay, see, the program has told us that smoking a cigarette will relax us, and tobacco has some very magical qualities to it, because whatever your intention, it amplifies. That's like the natural medicine of tobacco. That's the tracking. The tracking is understanding the tobacco is a natural amplifier of our intention. So what does the conditioning and the program do? It makes sure that we know it's addictive. Because the truth is, I don't believe tobacco is addictive. I believe they push it as an addictive substance, so therefore it amplifies our intentions. So it's addictive, but it also has been told to us, you know, oh, we relax when we, you know, relax and smoke a cigarette. Look at, I mean, our media is so, it wants us doing the things that we desire. I mean, all you have to do is look at the media and see that it sells peace of mind, clarity, joy and happiness, but it doesn't do it by ever telling you to go within. See, mm-hmm. The upside, it sells the right message, but it gives it to us on the upside down cart, which is always purchase this, ingest that. I mean, and it's so funny because we've reached a point. It's like the drugs that they're selling on the TV with side effects as, discharge, anal discharge, potential accidental death, bloody noses, liver collapsing. I mean, I scratch my head and go, I remember being a really good salesman with cocaine because coke was easy to sell to people that didn't want to feel. And it makes me laugh because you can really see the unconsciousness of the planet that the pharmaceutical companies, all they have to do is just keep bringing, airing these commercials. And it's so funny how they air them between like 10 and 3 o'clock in the morning. And people just run to buy them. You know, I was watching this one commercial about a pill to lose weight. And it was so funny. They would send you 2 bottles free. And if it didn't work, they would reimburse you. And I literally found myself saying out loud, okay, wonderful. You're going to reimburse my bank account. But while it's killing me, what are you going to do? It's like people are just, they're so unconscious of what they're putting into their bodies that these are synthetic drugs that, really, you just don't have to be an MD to figure out these are not very healthy for your body. There's ways of losing weight, and there's also the ultimate weight to lose is the need to be thin to be accepted.
All that's played on, that's all played into the hook, so to speak.
It is played into the hook. That's
exact
from especially the media, and then, like I said, everything I see the kids, what the kids are going after. They want to be rock stars. Nickelodeon Jr., which basically has shows made for 2 and 3 year olds. Mm-hmm. They're singing songs about I want to be a rock star.
Yeah.
I mean, they are starting really early to get, the human mind hooked on, the journey of the Matrix. I mean, it's even before that, because I've heard it's in the food, and this is not about, I don't want to share this and say, how do we get out of it? We become conscious. We choose to say, what's the truth? See, it's such an important essence to be willing to look at yourself honestly. Mm. Because I can remember, it took me a good long time before I quit cigarettes. But I can remember, and cocaine as well. I can remember sitting in the middle of, coke parties going, why don't we all sit around and talk about why we do cocaine? Because coke tends to make you talk. But the funny part about it was nobody wanted to talk why we were doing it. Nobody wanted to talk about why we were doing cocaine. They just wanted to ramble off these mental concepts that got tricked. And I was like, why are we smoking cigarettes? We're smoking cigarettes because it's something that's what, for me, it was my best friend. I could light a cigarette and that cigarette would make me feel better. That was an amazing thing for me to have, and I wasn't about to give that up so easily.
Yeah.
Now the funny part about it is I found the forest is exactly the same thing, if not tremendously more, because every time I don't feel good in my body when I go to the forest, I feel good. It's not paying my bills. It's not making me and my boyfriend not fight. It's not doing anything for the Matrix. It's doing everything for the truth of who I am, which is ultimately the clarity that I want to feel good. And the forest is actually in alignment that the forest is a healthy way to feel good. Cigarettes aren't the healthy way to feel good. Drinking and drugging isn't the healthy way to feel good. Those are simply the way the society tells you to do it.
Yeah.
Society just wants to keep you in the slavement.
It's kind of funny because I'm listening to you and I'm following you, and then I'm thinking of
I'm all over the place a little bit.
No, I love it. I love it because it's it's kind of like exploring where that all goes, because, you know, I was obviously being a writer for an age group, it's not that I chose to be a writer for that age group, it's just that what I write tends to be, you know, that age group of anywhere from like 8 to like 14, and obviously adults love it. But, you know, I noticed, and this isn't new, but it's clear that some of the stuff that really sells is you know, and I couldn't fake it if I tried. So this isn't about me, you know. I write what is magical and enchanting and truthful and fun. But what I've noticed is that if you're deliberately trying to appeal to the market, yes, you put in all these elements of sexuality and you know, just some really, like, I don't jive with it, you know. And I think that, you know, the days of The Wind in the Willows and you know, the Secret Garden, and, you know, it's like, where is that? And that's what my stories are still holding, an essence of that. And I'm not willing to, you know, just jazz it up with that. So, you know, I'll see where it goes.
I don't think you could anyway, Janine.
No, I can't. I couldn't if I tried. And if I
you
did,
couldn't fake it. Yeah, you couldn't.
Right. And, you know, who knows where I'd end up. But my point is that, you know, with all the really kind of absurd intensity that things seem to be, you know, the ridiculous commercials with the drugs. I mean, it's just crazy.
Right.
And the children's material that's now sexualized and, you know, got vampires and, you know, totally unreal.
Also, just so you know, the children's stuff is saturated with ETs. All of it is alien. It's unbelievable how much alien information is coming through
networks. Yeah, and there's just something, you know, it's just something that, you know, whatever it is that I'm attracted to in presenting a story, it just, that's not my attraction. But I also, my question is, and this is the exploration part, because, you know, with all the choices that can be made that really are, you know, they're absurd to me. But I think that, and maybe it is more intense and it's more polarized and there's so many more choices now. But I'm wondering, you know, okay, is this a question of how lost do you have to get before you find yourself? Because that, you know, what is the point of all that? Like, I'm wondering, you know, how far do people have to lose themselves before they're ever really, you know, woken up or wake up, or, you know, you can't live on, you can't really live on this stuff forever. So, you know, where does it take you? Because I think it's a good question of, okay, so if this is society's choice and it seems to me like, wow, you know, if you're not, you know, some of these reality shows are crazy, you know, the exposure of the what's that show where the hoarders, the people that hoard stuff, the people that hoard.
Oh, the hoarders!
Things.
Oh, wow! Yeah, yeah.
No, it's like there. You know, you go, okay, the sensationalism is just wild, and it's so, you know, you wonder, well, where, and I don't think about it too much. It's just I'm more curious about it, but it's like, where will it take society eventually? What is all this about? You know, I mean, because for me, it's like, is it the more lost you become, the closer you are to being found? I mean, I don't know.
Well,
I really,
you know,
don't know.
But I think that's, there's an interesting statement. I think it was David Icke that said it. I'm not sure, but he was like, you know, we seek enlightenment as if it's outside of us.
Okay.
But the truth is, it's really about removing all the beliefs. And it's so funny because there's an analogy I can use with Scott that's helping me. When Scott takes these astrophotography pictures,
Right.
He takes them from different points of view, and then he stacks the pictures. So it's literally you get a more it's a more rich, and the picture itself has more depth and clarity because it's literally from just a smidgen of a different perspective stacked on one another. And that's what it appears to me is, you know, we came to this, why are we here is one of the, you know, four major questions.
Yeah.
We came here to understand ourselves from the point of view of if we didn't know ourselves as infinite.
Because okay, right, makes sense to me. That makes sense.
Right,
so,
right, because,
right.
Yeah, so that means the truth is what you just said. The further we go out, it's the point of, well, that's where we came. We did, you know, I didn't come here to just have a paper-thin experience. I mean,
right.
I came here, I want to go, you know, I'm digging to China, so to speak. I mean, I really want to know, and I'll tell you, cocaine definitely brought me to the outskirts of, you know,
oh, totally.
The
I get it.
The sensation I had that I was not supported by my own being. I didn't even know my own. See, well, I'll be honest with you. See, the truth is, though,
what?
In my height when I was smoking base
yeah.
cocaine, which takes you even further than snorting cocaine,
mm-hmm.
there would be moments of clarity where, you know, people who I was with were rushing me into the bathtub, giving me orange juice because they were sure I was going to have a heart attack. Where moments of clarity would come and my presence would show up. And, you know, because it's so funny. We can't be disconnected from it. We can have the appearance that we are, and that appearance is a significant, you know, it's not to be undervalued. There is the value of not knowing that connection when
yeah.
we do remember that we're connected is the compassion, is the true empathy, the true understanding. Because like David said it so clearly, because he had to go through such ridicule in his journey, he really has an understanding not to take other people's journeys away from them, which are the challenging parts of the journey, which are the places where, you know, somebody might be calling you up for help and you really do understand that the help that you need to give them is to hang up the phone and let them be with themselves.
Right,
That, you know, the love and lighters will go, no, you've got to be there for them. No,
right.
You don't save them from themselves. You give them the space to find themselves because it is the matrix on top that's going, I need your help to cope with this. And the truth is, no, you don't. No, you don't. What's everything you need to cope with this is in self. It's just a matter of, is the circumstance pointing you to go within or is the circumstance being supported and literally being enabled to continue to focus your energetic cords on the outside? Because everything I've ever not gotten in life, at this point I clearly see, including not having a child, I clearly see how genuinely beneficial that was to the journey of finding me, going within and finding Goldie. Because, I mean, tracking ourselves, you know, it started off last week. I talked about, you know, I had listened to a show from myself 4 years ago. And, you know, it's so interesting because I was in my head, absolutely, but I was really saying basically the same things I'm saying today. I just didn't have the experience of them. I was saying that's what we all need to do. But now that I've actually journeyed into the experience of not having my boyfriend, you know, be my prince and save me from my terrible life, but me actually going within and what ultimately saved me from my terrible life was me allowing myself to feel what I thought was terrible. Because truth be told, once I allowed myself to feel that I didn't have a child, that I never got married, that, you know, I don't have a career that affords me to live, you know, in this luxurious apartment building or whatever.
Right.
All of those things really aren't, that's not my dream. That was society's
conditioned dream. My dream is to be connected with all living things. And by golly, guess what? I am.
Yeah.
My dream was, you know, to expand myself into the heavens and to travel. Holy shit, I got a boyfriend who not only takes pictures of it, but really supports the journey of being there, because when we're outside together, and even when we're inside, there's that silence that Scott's not chatty by any means, shape, or form. I mean, that's just not who Scott is. And so he brings to me this beautiful silence of the journey of being with self and yet having another divine being right next to you. That's, you know, I'm not used to that. I'm used to most of the boyfriends I had, if I would go into silent mode, would get as frustrated with me as I used to get with Scott. I mean, it used to be like, Scott, God damn it, talk to me. Because I was basically in a space where I was afraid to get to know myself. And now I'm not. I'm enjoying.
You misinterpret the silence, but you know, it's so, just a side note here, it's so cool is that very unexpected, just to hear about you and Scott outside at night and him with the photographing, and they're so beautiful. I mean, I've seen Jupiter the Green, but that is an unexpected, that kind of seems like, wow, where'd that come from? And
I agree.
I love that because I did know that, you know, how could you even predict it? You couldn't, but there it is, and it's really better than I could have eaten. Like if you said, make something
absolutely.
Up, Jay.
Absolutely.
I wouldn't have made that up, and I love that, you know?
Right.
I it's something I've noticed since you've been talking about it. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty amazing, you know? A lot of times, too, when I'm feeling, what I've noticed over the years, but in the last couple of years, so I totally understand this, is sometimes when I have felt sort of like you listen to the news or you know, everything starts to feel like, and I notice a certain nervousness in me. I realize that when I watch, a special where they show you galaxies, or if I see them on the internet, where, you know, looking at, say, the scene stuff, where you see these beautiful galaxies, and it calms me down. There's something calming. Yeah, so it's just, I totally, when you start talking about laying out there on the bed and under the darkness, and it's kind of got a little bit of coolness in the air, and heat, I just completely... I can feel it. I start feeling calmer, you know. Because there's something about that that's so, I don't know, maybe what it is it's a self-reflection of ourselves, you know. Because as we talk about, you know, the torque and the resistance and the galaxies, and you just said, we're further out on the edge than you think. We're not, and I'm going, man, that's how I was feeling.
Right.
Isn't that funny that she said that, you know, that, but it's a good thing. I like, you know, kind of being out there on the edge of like, what's next, you know, or the unfolding, or, you know, what's in that next place of knowing.
Definitely. And I do believe those pictures of the galaxy and things, that is very similar to knowing how to read and write in comparison with I can't think of his name, the guy we talked about from the slave.
Frederick Douglass.
I think exploring that part of us is, like I said, that is the same thing as him teaching himself how to read and write. It has a quality to it that, exactly like
liberating,
you said,
freeing.
In that calming, it's helping your cells remember.
It's helping to organize an understanding of who you are, who I am, who
Perfect.
We are.
Exactly.
You know, which is what
well
basically
said.
Got him out of slavery, which was, you know.
Well, because you know what the truth is, and this needs to be said, and David says it, and I've said it actually, you know, freedom is not given to you. You own your freedom.
If you're waiting for something to give you freedom, you don't get freedom. Freedom is not given to you. It's a sovereign state of being because you're infinite. You can't be controlled when you choose not to be.
Yeah.
And it is a very...
Did he say that in part three? Because I think
he did say that in part three.
Yes,
he did say that in part three.
Because I'm listening to every word he's saying, and I was like, when did he say that?
Yeah, he says it in part three.
Wait, did I miss that? You know, so...
But, you know, but we've said that before anyway. We've said that on the show that, you know, I've said that on Facebook. You know, one of the things I also tracked was, it was very interesting. I was thinking to myself, one of the first infants that I ever took care of, a little boy named Mikey, I'll never forget this. I was sitting on the couch about 10 feet away from him. He was sitting in front of a tower of CDs, you know, where it's a single row of CDs or DVDs, and that's how they would, you know, store them.
Yeah.
And he was pulling the CDs in and out, and I literally got the sensation. I was like, I went, I don't know if I said it out loud or to myself, but I was like, Archangel Michael, protect Mikey. And within seconds, he pulled the CD, the tower came down. And what it did was it literally came down straight for him and then took an abnormal right turn and then landed beside him. It never touched him. And I saw this. I mean, and I was like, now, the reason why I'm bringing this up from a tracking point of view is it struck me that I called in Archangel Michael because I didn't, at the time, that was the energy who could protect Mikey. But in October 15, 2012, I don't call in anybody but me.
Right,
you know,
right.
When 13 cars were chasing me and Alana down the road, truly looking to do whatever, some kind of harm they were looking to do to both of us, mostly me, not her, I wasn't saying Archangel Michael protect me. And when I was on the phone with 911 and the police told me, you know, pull over to the side, I literally told the police to go fuck themselves. What part of being chased by 13 cars don't you get? I was like, you'll find me, and I'll probably be the maniac driving on the other side of the road, the wrong side of the road, because that's exactly where we were. But so my point is that when I track that, you know, for the 911 operator to tell me to pull to the side, are you kidding me? Why would you pull to the side when there's a mob behind you? You know, like, I'm not getting out of this car until I'm surrounded by cops. And that was literally the thought in my mind that I literally manifested. I will not get out of this car until I'm surrounded. And I didn't get out of the car until there was a cop next to me. And then within 30 seconds, there was four more cop cars that made a semicircle. And the other 13 cars showed up on the other side of that semicircle. And I went, okay, now I'm good. Because now I'm not going to get my ass handed to me.
But, well, you know, that's just, to me, that's kind of like, you know, you're on automatic, but your feeling capacity is right on about what you instinctually need to do. And, you know, and there's a certain, I think there's a certain development. Yeah, right. That, like, there's a certain development that we acquire from continuing on in our process and then this is what happens, this confidence, you know, you don't even have to question it, think about it, it just occurs, and then you look back at it later and you go, man, you know, just making the right calls, just like feeling it, you know, in the moment without even knowing it, you know, and you're not calling on Archangel Michael. This is a, you know, this is sort of a, you're your own universe centered, you know, I'm handling this kind of thing. Like,
right.
I mean...
Well, and
that
includes also daily. You know, I'm not calling Archangel Michael to help me find a job.
No, but
You know, meaning everyday things, everyday issues too, you know.
Well, I find, you know, what's interesting in reflection about that, when you're in those moments of, either every day or something more intense occurs where there requires, you know, some kind of response. But, you know, I remember
some kind of protection,
now,
and that's it. Some kind of protection response. That's
right,
what my point
was. It's just almost, right, because even when, you know, I was at that book signing and someone goes, there's a lady down. I just did what I had to do. I didn't call on anybody.
Yeah, you didn't call in archangels.
No,
right.
I didn't call in anything, any God, anybody. It was just like, you know, do what you got to do, Jay. And that wasn't even a thought. I just did what I had to do. You know,
and don't you believe that that comes from the practice of, because you knew what you had to do when you had to get divorced.
And it's not just because you got divorced. Despite the fact that you're scared shitless, you know. I mean, I was uncomfortable galore when I did that. You know, I mean, that was the true test of do it anyway. And you know, there was a part of me that said, this is what you have to do because this is for the good of you. But part of me's going, you know, so... But
totally,
yes, I think
totally.
That once you keep going through those, what I perceive as like these initiations of yourself, which is perseverance despite, you know, the present, you know, discomfort of what next, you just do it. And, you know,
and also track your fears. I mean, can you track your fears and see where, like, a place where you used to be afraid, where now you're not?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, have you ever, can you give an example or two?
Well, I mean, let's see. Can I give an example of where, I mean, honestly, for instance, and you know this about me, I have no perception of what it feels like for someone to go, oh, I wish I had someone. I don't even know what they're talking about. It's like, what? You know, I'm like, what do you mean, wish you had someone? I don't even know what that means. It's like,
do you know that that is like a number one, to have a partner in life? I would say from my, and this is my perspective, that was my number one goal from the time I was 30 until I met you.
Right. No, but the identity.
I mean, that was it.
See, the personal identity in society, I guess, is so strong to suggest to people that you're supposed to have someone. And I'm sure when I was, getting divorced and, you know, I knew my identity as a married woman with children. And then all that was, still my children were great, but all that was, that identity was leaving me. But once I got over that sort of what you almost think to take your breath away, It just left. It was like, in fact, maybe this is the more lost you feel, the closer you are to being found. Maybe that's
exactly
the point. Maybe that's the point of those ridiculous pharmaceutical commercials.
Well, of course, because you can come back from anything.
I mean, it's so absurd, but I do think that. if you stay with the total, I literally love the idea of the ability to fly by the seat of your pants, because I do think, or, you know, to be quick on your feet, or those are skills that I truly appreciate, because I think that's life. You know, I don't think that the safe world is like, I think that's an absurd notion for so many reasons, but the whole idea of my personal safety, of even an identification of who I thought I was, that was so necessary for me to have obliterated, you know, and I made the choice. It didn't even quote happen to me. I made the choice. And so, you know,
That's actually also very, I tend to find people tend to, if they do start the journey, it's often because life has chose something for them that now they're just, because I too am, I have quit jobs, left relationships, moved out of houses, you know, and simply because, I mean, like I said, that I really do believe, see, that is part of being in that bigger energy. Simply because I can't live with myself when I'm not comfortable with whatever the situation is. And, you know, it's interesting because society would deem that being irresponsible. And I would deem it as being self-responsible.
Right, right. And I don't,
or even soul responsible.
Right, and I think that I have a different feeling about what was perceived as sort of man-made, sort of rules that I no longer, I go, no, that's just, it just doesn't, that doesn't, at the cost of your of your own self, I don't believe in them, you know, the man-made
right.
rules.
No,
I
right.
just, I don't.
Right.
So that's
right.
a big thing too for me, where I am naturally irreverent to that. And you would not know that because you think, oh no, she's too nice, you know. But I really am irreverent. But I,
that's
you know,
true,
but,
though. That is,
yes,
yes.
I am irreverent to that because I don't believe in sacrificing yourself for someone else's, you know, it's to not ruffle the waters or upset the apple cart. I don't believe in that. I do
right.
believe
martyrdom.
In upsetting.
Martyrdom.
It's like turn the apple cart over. You know, it's like
yeah.
it's
yeah,
time.
Right on.
You know.
Yeah. No, we have that in common, and that's a
yeah.
beautiful thing. I mean, from my perspective, most people are definitely energetically
yeah.
and the setup of to feed off of. You know,
and I do believe that it is a
the
setup.
Sympathy, the sympathy that people give you because you have sacrificed for something or someone.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it is a setup. I really do. And I think it's a personal setup because I don't really actually believe that it's truth. I don't.
I think it's disempowering.
It's a setup. Right.
I think it's disempowering. Yes.
Yeah. And it's no, you know, you and I mean, it's no wonder that I am falling in love with Shaun the Rabbit Thief. I know I wrote the story, but I truly am like, that little rabbit is just stolen my heart. He has, because he
nice.
Is irreverent. You know, he's just everything, you know. It's like you want to be where, you know, you break the rules, but you end up, I don't know, you end up, quote, doing the right thing, even though you've broken all the rules.
That's exactly right.
Right?
You know,
it's cool.
Daniel Jacob said to me during one of my one-on-one personal sessions with him, I think he was in channel when he said it, he goes, something to the effect of, if you're feeling guilty about your choice, if you're feeling guilty about your choices, you know you're making the right ones.
That's a good one.
I know. I swear what he said. Because I think, if I'm correct, I was talking about that. I had two men in my life. I go, and what I would end up having to do, because both of them were, I didn't feel fulfilled from either one of them separately. I needed both of them for different reasons. I go, so I would break up with one and go see the other, break up with that one, go see. And I go, I'm kind of feeling guilty about that. And he was like, that means you're making the right choices for yourself, you know. Because
right.
the truth is, the actions we take, you know, I part of the tracking again, look, you know, I definitely invite the audience, look at the choices you make. And
yeah.
and track why you're making them. Track,
yeah.
If you want to learn how to track yourself energetically, highly recommend Carolyn Mace's Anatomy of Spirit, whether the book or the audio cassettes, because, boy, nobody tracks energy like Carolyn Mace. She is truly, in my humble opinion, the expert in the field, because it's about understanding how we're feeding. Like, my understanding of feeding in the competition, the area in the relationship of competition between friends. And like I said, this isn't just about competition on the sports field. This is about having conversations with people who me and them will do the one up. I say something, they one up me,
yeah.
and then
yeah.
and then I say something to one up them, and it's about understanding, you know. I'm feeding off of this, because then the truth becomes, okay, I am feeding off of this, but does it feel good? You know, it's almost like, all right, you're eating rotten tomatoes. Well, how's that working for you, Goldie? And it's like, you know what?
Yeah.
And then I meet Janine, who just inherently doesn't have competition as one of her issues. So I see what it's like to actually play on a field that there's no winners and losers here. I mean, it literally, I throw competition remarks out to her. She doesn't throw them back at me. And my truth is, I like it. See, this is why it's so interesting, because things will feel counterintuitive. Choices and behaviors that you make initially, because Janine has shown me how good it feels to be in a relationship not competing, I now have a new reference point that when I go into competition spaces, I can then, you know, I can see it in myself and go, okay, Goldie, come back to the witness. Get, you know, I just stop feeding off of that. Don't, you know, whether it's I apologize or I just, once I become aware of it, it's funny. It's like you can't really keep doing something when it's conscious. It's so easy to do these actions and behaviors when they're unconscious, because ultimately I was able to quit cigarettes for good when I truly realized that the cigarettes were helping me take a deep breath, but I didn't need the cigarette to do that. So once I learned the deep breath, how good it felt, I didn't release the cigarettes, you know, in a struggle, you know. I mean, I just went, okay, I'm done with cigarettes. And, you know, and I'm on 5 years that I quit. And there's still times where, like, I'll hang around friends who smoke, and there's times that I can smell it, and I'm like, that smells delicious. There's other times that I'm like, you know, boy, I could go for a cigarette. And it's so funny, because when I, like, actually, this is a hit. Let me finish my thought. I have a thought where I'm like, okay, I could go for a cigarette. And what I'm starting to learn to do, it's like, okay, well, why are you feeling the need for the cigarette? Because it also hit me in the woods that eating for me is very much it's stuffing my feelings. I'm trying to digest what I'm feeling at the moment. And I think the reason why I eat sweets is because what I'm digesting is sour or bitter. So I don't want to digest the sour or the bitter. So I eat the cookie or I eat the cake in trying to replace that. But again, Janine, you have helped me see that, no, go with that. Digest the bitter, digest the sour, because as I'm digesting these, you know, as I'm noticing how food is playing a part in my energetic experience, I'm starting to have the understanding of, you know, in my humble opinion, when you start hitting your 40s, I think all of us at some level eat emotionally. We're emotionally, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
it's emotional eating as opposed to, you know, as a kid, I lived on lettuce and mayonnaise sandwiches and cereal. My palate I didn't need food. I really ate barely nothing. I've never been one of those, you know, gourmet, you know, I like those flavors, but I live very, you know, I eat and live on food that's very basic. But I'm in this tracking, I am definitely getting a new awareness of what the part food plays in my life.
This is really cool because, you know, you were talking about competition and, you know, noticing competition when you're, you know, even talking to someone in the one-upmanship kind of thing. But, you know, it's really amazing. Like, this is so, for me, so cool because once you recognize that, it really... It's just a matter of time before it shifts because it's now temporary. That once you become aware of something.
Well, no. But it's only temporary because if I change the structure of my cords.
Well, here's the cool thing though about that. Once and this is very quantum physics, but it's also very personal relationship, which I guess is the same actually, but. You know, once you are aware of something, the relationship with it changes, and that's a really good thing.
That's true.
Because
yes,
yeah, because now, like even okay, so the awareness of being, you know, one-upmanship with someone, even if it takes a couple more months, a year, the awareness has already changed the dynamic, And it will be.
That's
it
true.
Is, to me,
that's
it's
true.
Eventually it's eventually going to shift because it's it already has taken on a new thing. So to me, it's like immediately I'm going, it's temporary. It's just a matter of time. And that's actually
right.
true. It is just a matter of time. The thing about the awareness
that's
of
true.
Even,
that
you
is
know,
true.
Why, okay, so why, you know, why you would, you know, looking at eating certain foods and why you eat, because this wasn't even your nature as a young girl, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so you don't even have to try too hard because once the awareness is there, something has already shifted and it is changing and it is only a matter of time. It's temporary. Because that's the beauty of being aware of how awareness and consciousness shifts everything. And so,
right.
you know, for me, that's like fascinating to me because, you know, I'm part of that. Obviously, and it's happened to me, you know, but you also, I can also see it happening for you. And then I can see
right.
it the when something becomes an awareness, which is so interesting because in
well,
like,
let me ask you a question though. Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Okay. So I agree that awareness, but I mean, haven't you known somebody who, you know, like says they're aware, but the behavior doesn't change? Now, and personally for me, that I can get a little bonky birds. You know, that can drive me a little crazy. And of course, I get it because what's driving me crazy is something in me. You know, in other words, I definitely agree. Awareness is a huge. I mean, this is why the mind, the awareness comes through our mind.
When I say it's temporary, it could be years. I mean, all I'm saying though is one.
It could be lifetimes.
It could be
lifetime.
But the awareness,
okay, right on.
You know, and but there's something about, you know, and I don't know if you mean like, you know, someone reads an article in Cosmopolitan and then they go, oh, look, you know, that I don't know if I would qualify as an awareness or, you know, this is like sort of a self-reflective insight.
Oh, that's an interesting, right, okay.
It's like an
right,
inside
right.
job kind of thing, you know, like a real true... You noticing the one-upmanship in a relationship thing, because basically what that is there's a power struggle going on, and then you decide, I don't want to. This isn't even fun. I don't even like it. My body's not even like having a good time, and you decide, you know, basically the best way to be in a power struggle is to just not play. You know, you step out, you become bigger than it. You just don't go there. I mean, and truly, it's usually because
right.
you're not interested. You're just not interested.
No, well, the question you had me ask during
yes.
a recent struggle I was in, which actually I was speaking about last Monday on the show,
was,
yeah. do you value the relationship?
Right. Isn't that a good one? I mean,
because... Well, that's coming up because, see, that's what's... You know, if... Because if I value the relationship, I find the relationships I don't value,
yeah.
I don't shift my behavior for.
Oh, okay. That's a good one.
But
that's
if I value
noticing.
The... Well, it's the truth. I mean, because, see, this is where, you know, I remember when me and Scott will have our periods where
sure.
we were, you know, we had significant times where we were broken up. In the 5 years I've known him, I have not been with him the entire 5 years.
Right.
And there would be other men in my life that, truth be told, they just didn't bring... There was a natural attraction to Scott that, you know, I was a serial dater from the internet. You know, I mean, at the time when, you know, I was, you know, 50 pounds less than I am now, I didn't have any trouble getting dates on the internet. And
right.
I could go on serial dates. But the truth is, finding someone that... You know, it's like you've got to like somebody enough that you're willing to change yourself when you're doing self-exploration. Because there are people that you can have in your life that you really go, you know, I'm just not going to change. I don't care if they come and go in my life. I mean, I don't care. So, therefore, it's not enough to get me to change.
Yeah.
And that could be my own lack of sensitivity. Cause
well, no, I was going to say, here's kind of, you know, well, another, you know, because I find these just places to keep going with, and, you know, I don't know the answer, neither do you, but Right. You know, you obviously value the relationship with yourself. So, you know, I think
right.
eventually...
No, that's becoming the one I value the most,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a valid... Right on.
Right, so...
That's
so,
interesting,
you know,
right on.
And, yeah, and I don't really know where that takes me or you, you know, of... I mean, it changes everything, so to speak. If you value the relationship with yourself, then... everything else really does change. It really does. I mean, and I would say that would probably be...
Jeannie, that's brilliant, actually. Right on. Right on.
But thank
well, because it's so funny. I could feel myself being focused outward. But the truth
right.
is, all relationships at this point inwards. And
right,
you know
or
what?
We, or
the,
we
one,
forget.
The one that I will
we
never...
forget.
I will not sacrifice myself to make someone feel good. That I mean... I just
yeah.
won't do that. If the choice is sacrifice self or potentially lose the relationship, even with my beloved Scott, I will.
Yeah.
I will not sacrifice my. I'll lose the relationship because my. It really is. It. I. You know. We talked about the importance of having the awareness of turning ourselves from being our worst enemy into our best friend.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
is an. Energetic as well as, you know, the four bodies, physical, emotional, spiritual, and mental, awareness. There is a point and an awareness where you just simply don't put yourself under the bus so somebody else feels better. I mean, you just stop doing that. And it's a game changer because, you know, depending on where you are, you know, in your life, if you've been basically the people pleaser,
mm-hmm.
you know, your whole life, I can promise you the people in your life are going to be, you know, they're going to be pissed off that you're going into this mode of taking care of yourself and not and putting them second that, or whatever. You know,
playing a small thing, you know. You know,
right.
that
right.
comes back up. You know what I mean? That does trigger some
people. No, that's
people.
Exactly right.
That does
right.
trigger some people, but so be it, you know. I mean...
well, because
you know,
it all comes down to what's the goal, what, where, you know, is the journey for you to find yourself, because you know we can be found in the dark, you know, we really
mm-hmm.
can, because we're never not a part of ourselves, you know, we're never not connected to ourselves. It,
well
it's
yeah
just
I mean
you
and
find
that
your...
is that you know it's I still keep going back to those commercials on television and I'm like, you know, because that is sort of the you know it all ends up, you know, being perfect, you know, like I keep
of course,
going it
of course.
You know, when I look at, you know, where my book's gone so far, and I, you know, and oh, and why didn't they get reviewed, and blah blah blah, and then I realize I, you know, I go, it's perfect what's happening, what, you know, and then you realize, you know, maybe the phone call that you know, did the power struggle with, and somehow that all ends up really kind of working out, you know, or for me, that's what I'm noticing is even those places where I'm in resistance, the cat is running away with a piece of tape. She's being funny. You know, you end up going, oh, because you do come out of those torque places or those tension places or those resistant places, you know, and
a
I mean,
new person,
and,
a new being.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, and you and I mean, I'm experiencing them almost daily, you know, where.
Yeah, no,
you know,
me too. Me too.
You'll
Jay, we
meet?
Have a caller. We have
oh,
a caller.
Okay.
I'm going to bring
okay.
her. I think it's Marcia, but I'm not sure.
Oh, okay.
Hi, area
okay.
code 705. You're on the air.
It is me. Hi.
Yay.
Hi.
I just came on and saw that your yellow was up. How are you?
I am good. I've been sitting in deep in thought, listening to you, both you ladies, talk about everything that you talk about. You go in, I would think of something, and within 5 minutes, you guys were talking about it. And then,
oh, wow.
Oh.
Nice.
And I'd like to have a conversation about this. Blah, 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 blah. I have had nameless conversations all week long with these, numerous, I should say, not nameless, conversations with women who have called just to talk about the competition thing. Other women and about true friendships and how heartbreaking and I saw it, some of the women, you know, and maybe it's because I'm in my 50s. I don't know. I just, no, it's not because of that. Because one of my daughters, she said to me, friends, well, she goes, you know what? They suck. I don't have any. I'm okay. And she really is. She goes, if a good one comes along, I'm in. If not, they can stay home. You know? And
yeah.
I was
yeah.
like, okay, well, are you a good one? She said, yeah, I am. I just don't take shit well. And I'm like, oh, okay. She goes, and I said, well, what do you mean by that? And she said, well, you're having a conversation. They have enough nerve, or you even have enough nerve to call them a friend. And I started realizing, okay, I have to become friends with myself. And
Well, that's the relationship with self, you know.
Yeah.
If you value that, then everything else shifts. You know?
Well, I spent years, I got so adept at being on my own, like living in my own place, that I didn't want company. It was like...
Yeah, I can appreciate that now. I mean, I talked about becoming, you know, I want to do social things, and then it really comes down to it. No, I really just want to be by myself or with just Scott. You know, where I don't have to try so hard. I want to be with people, but I want it to be effortless, not just energetic game.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know, I've run out of things to say to it, and I almost feel like, am I giving up on them? It's kind of eerie. I believe, though, it's not so much giving up on people. It's more of, well, they'll figure it out.
Hmm,
I'm leaving
right.
it with, and it's, you know, this, it's not my job to have everyone understand me or not, or understand the self or whatever I had going on there. Just has worn out its purpose, and in a way, it feels antisocial.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's how it's responded
to.
That's how others respond to it, but not, you know, for me, I think it's soulful. It's self-centered in a soulful way.
Well,
you know,
when I was first doing this, I was crabby. And in the last, I'm like 2-3 months now, no smoking. Woohoo!
Oh, congrats! Oh. Yes! Nice!
But I tell you, there's moments, though, that I swear I just went out and had a smoke. I could feel it. It's like roaring through my body, and the crabbiness is just unreal. Poor Joe. Good thing he left.
But, you know, I think that crabbiness has a lot to tell you, though. You know what I mean? Like, that voice, that crabbiness, there's something of value there, you know, that maybe don't push that away. Like, maybe you don't have to prolong its, you know, the crabbiness, because what, you know, if there was something the crabbiness had to tell you, I wonder what that would be. You know?
Well, I was thinking, you know, because we have this predilection throughout society to be appropriate, to be nice. And
exactly.
I've never really considered appropriate, so not really. You know.
No, but maybe that's it. You know, it's okay to be crabby and... Maybe.
Well, I try not to, like, I the choice is to be harmonious. But if you're in a room and there's all these people and they're pretending that something isn't going on when it's clearly, like, totally dysfunctional, I can't not mention it.
You know, if we were at a party, me, you, and Janine, Marcia, we'd all be in the corner pointing everything out.
And of course, and then going, well, this is how it affects me, because, you know, we see it because we're willing to see it in ourselves. That,
well, it's
you know,
don't invite Marsha over. And it's like, why? Well, you know, maybe it's, I feel like a big smoking mirror. Like I feel
oh,
like.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
I'm wearing
interesting
a,
use of words, too.
Yeah, like here, you're going to see all your deepest fears. And I don't.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they will go away. And,
well, it's not that they're going to go away, Moshe. They're going to, when you're feeling those fears, honestly, without covering them up or stuffing them down or smoking them out, ultimately what you're going to understand is in those fears is your deepest strength.
Yeah, and I think there's an intelligence in the crankiness. I think.
Oh, what I'm saying, just
yes.
Intelligence in the crankiness. Yeah, it's all the garbage that I stuffed under the rug to be.
Yeah,
in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wanting
yeah.
its chance
it's coming out, but unfortunately,
exactly.
It's like
exactly.
I say to Joe, fasten your seatbelt. Here it comes. I'm going beforehand because I can feel it right.
Yeah, but now is the time, Marsha. I'm delighted that you're doing this. To be honest, because something else, David Icke said, which was really interesting. He goes, the more of us that are willing to accept this consciousness from a deeper perspective. In other words, the more of us that are willing to go deep within this consciousness, the more consciousness is willing to share with us.
Mm.
So. You know, there really is a ripple effect of us being willing to kind of, you know, go against mass consciousness, you know, not be, quote-unquote, the good girls and, you know, the polite girls, but we're the girls standing around bringing in this consciousness that ultimately really is the balancing aspect. It is the divine feminine as it truly is, not the divine feminine from the point of view from the out-of-balance masculine, which has defined us as we should be heard and not seen, or we should be seen and not heard, and those kind of, you know. You ever see those old-fashioned ads of what does a wife do when her husband comes home? I mean, like, you know, she takes his shoes off and she rubs his feet and she gets him a drink and she gives him a blowjob and she makes him dinner and she better not have a hair out of place and her makeup better be good because that's what a good wife does.
We've been
pushed down with the divine feminine. It's time to get cranky and be okay with it. It's
right,
time.
And even other women, like you know, if there's, you know, I mean, I was just thinking when someone's cranky, like, you know, it would be my discomfort with their crankiness that would be a problem, not that they're cranky. So, you know, if people are uncomfortable with your crankiness, then, you know, I see that as, like, I just feel that, like, you're on to something, and the cranky's got a lot of good stuff in there. And, you know, even if people are uncomfortable with your crankiness, it's kind of like, who cares? That's their issue.
I have a couple of friends who are not, and then I have Joe too. Thank goodness. but we're definitely, you know, someone came over about a week or two ago and said, "So, how's everything going here, where the women are men and the men are women?" Whatever. Haven't you ever seen, like, people who, you know, are just themselves? And I just let it go because,
because it was like, what is
that? Well,
but
you see how they immediately
yeah.
see it as that. They do. They see it as, you know, a woman has to be masculine in order to be allowed to be cranky. Divine feminine. Yeah, that's such nonsense.
And apparently, has something to do with being a true woman. There's so many reasons why I'm not a true woman. I failed this life course here on what a woman is. Aside from, well, Joe says he's a true woman. And,
hey, we appreciate men who have, you know, honor their feminine. I appreciate that.
Me too.
Tell Joe we'll hit the applause button for
my son.
I'm finding I get like all of a sudden I'm like really ticked off, and I know I need to write more, and I feel like then you know a cork put in my mouth, like duct tape. My favorite things of saying, you know, talking about duct tape experiences where here you go, we'll let it off a bit. Oh, not good, not good. Don't say that. And I need to.
No, I don't think this can be.
Right,
this
off.
Can't be quieted. This, you know,
no.
This really is the divine. And I believe that those of us who are in the space where we're aware of this, you know, like I say. It's all right to be angry. Now, that doesn't mean you kick the dog or you kick Joe.
No.
You know, meaning it's not about putting our anger onto another being, but
no.
It is about giving anger a voice in ourselves, where whether
totally.
You go to the woods
right.
or you do it in front of a fire or you write
yeah.
it. You gotta let it out, because the energy, from an energetic point of view, stuffing it will kill you.
Give it a voice. Give it a voice for sure.
Give it a voice.
It's like
exactly.
re-channeling, turning the channel onto a different channel. I'm not putting it onto people, but if what happens if, okay, so you're sitting there and you can hear what a person, they're sitting there, they're lying to you, and you got the pop-up
right.
boxes, and they're like, you know, I just started. I get up and I leave.
Yeah.
I can't
right.
stay.
Okay.
It's like
right
I get up and I leave and I go home. Oh, where'd Marcia go?
Right.
Well, you know what? I went home because you can't stop lying and I can't have a conversation.
Right, but isn't
right.
it okay that you're not interested in that relationship right now? I mean, there's nothing that's making you. Like, it's okay to sort of, you know, I think, pull away from a relationship that's not holding you or has, you know, a magnetic quality. I mean, to be disinterested in it is really, for me, that's another form of, my irreverent behavior, to go, no, I choose not to do that. And it's a choice. And I think even if, you know, sometimes we're seen as the bad guy, but really, who cares? You know, it's like, you don't have to choose putting yourself in a relationship where it feels maybe inauthentic and, you know, not in resonance with you, and you're not out there to fix it. You know, so I think
right.
I think that the discomfort could be you wrestling or, you know, with is it okay not to be interested in this relationship anymore? Because it may not interest you, and I think that's real, you know, and to me that's growth. Not everything can be salvaged, you know. And
Not everyone, you know, there's various things I have to, you know, and sitting with the trees and sitting out there and looking
yeah.
at the sky and everything, I came back into the grounding of compassion and knowing, you know, you really need, I don't think my sense of humor is gone. It's still there. I have funny things roar through my head.
Sure.
And, you know, it's like this humor troupe comes in and, oh, my God. And any old time, welcome back. It's like, oh.
Janine is the queen of humor in dark moments. It's very, you know, it's an art. Humor isn't, because I definitely don't, I have a wit about me, but when, like, I think what you're saying is, when I'm in that darker space, I have trouble finding that wit. I'm much more, you know, listen, I'm just going to fucking sit in this and get through it, okay? That, you know, like, you know, everybody's welcome to leave me alone. I'm not dragging you in here. But Janine, boy, I'll tell you, I've been on the phone with her during some dark periods. And she will say something that will crack me up in a place, and I'll be like, wow. I mean, I think there's an art to that humor that really kind of, it almost brings you just back out into the bigger picture at the time that goes, this is a dark moment, but this too shall pass. Everything.
shall pass.
Yes, temporary.
Because everything in this dimension is temporary. Everything in this dimension is temporary. So
I
you know,
would like to within myself, for myself and people, have compassion. At the same time, the compassion to know and the understanding and the that we are all such enormous souls, that we are just absolutely unfathomably huge.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Stop belittling other people by talking down like they aren't.
Well, the only thing I could say though is if you can live that and you can model that, but you can't. If someone else isn't going there, you know, that is their choice, and
that's the whole thing of not belittling. It's not bringing it because maybe they're not in that place, they don't remember it, and
right.
It's like then you're sitting there. And, but sometimes there's people that are in that control drama, and that's what I was talking about, the smoking mirror. It's you know, someone when I was younger threw the smoking mirror at me. I cried and I whined and I carried on. I was so offended that they would do this thing. And then I realized I got to see my own illusions.
Yeah.
Right on.
Kind of myself. But
and that always is tense before you see them. You know, I think it's uncomfortable leading up to that place.
And
it is. It's really uncomfortable, and like all your images have to fall apart, and your
shattered.
You know what, right?
It shattered, and it just went. Shh. And I was like, now what? Wow.
Yeah, but wait, no. Did you feel the breakthrough?
You're done. I just think, oh yeah, huh? I didn't know that was.
Well, did you feel the breakthrough though? Did you feel the breakthrough that once you got once you sat with that, because like for me, the breakthrough is always I drop into myself and I recognize, you know, true compassion is the understanding of, well, how does this game work? The game works by when we allow people to go through their own dark experiences, they have the chance to organically break through as well. As long as we keep saving people from their own creations, you know, that's that upside downness. We call that compassion in the Matrix, but in nature, that's not compassionate. What's compassionate is to let somebody find their own truth. That is to literally not get in their way and let them, if they're creating something that's going to essentially take them down, the most compassionate thing we can do is get out of their way and let them create it. And I'll tell you, from here into Nebraska, I'm just using a word, state, people will tell you, oh, Golden Hawk's crazy with that statement. You know, compassion is helping our fellow humans. It's like, yeah, helping them to do what? To stay addicted, to stay in a codependent relationship, to look outside themselves for the truth? Or is true compassion giving them the space to fall down, figure it out, and then when they're looking to get back up with the new wisdom that they can, then put your hand out to them and say, I'm right here, ma'am. I'm right here. I will definitely help you get up. But I'm not going to help you not fall down. I'm not going to push you down, even though sometimes I do, to be quite honest. But I'm not going to stop you from falling down because all of my truth is, my experience is every time I fall down, the breakthrough comes that I can take it. I'm strong enough. I'm smart enough to, oh my God, I don't need anything outside me. It's actually all within me. These are invaluable tools that you can't give to another. You can only give them the space to potentially experience it for themselves. I mean, that's my opinion anyways. Listen, loves, it is 10 after, and I don't want us to get – we're going to probably get cut off.
Yeah, I think
and
off
I don't want
already.
That. Well, are we off even streaming?
I don't know.
I don't think we are. The episode's still going on. So, but we are off the chat room streaming, yes.
Okay.
Marcia, thank you so much for calling. I love when you call in, sweetheart. I do. And I was watching you, but I was on the chat room, and then I was like, oh, Marcia put her hand up. I love it. I really do appreciate that you call in and share. Your shares are, they're right on point, and I love it. Thank you.
Well,
thank
I
you, Marcia.
Appreciate you both for being authentic and sharing.
Oh, back at you, babe.
Smoke
back
and mirror
you.
Brings you authenticity.
Thank you so
well,
much.
Yeah, you're beautiful. Thank you. Really, really appreciate your shares. Always, always. Unconditional phone line for you. And I love it. I actually recognize your number now. It's like, that's Marcia. And I was right. It was like, cool. Janine,
okay.
Share where people can find you and your book.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Of course.
Let's see. My new book is The Yawning Rabbit River Chronicle, and my website is jlkimmel.com, K-I-M-M-E-L.com, and I'm on Facebook as well. So thank you, Goldie. Thanks, Marcia. And I'll talk soon.
Thank you, Janine. Yeah, it was a great show. Feel good. We didn't have any echo issues, so that's always a beautiful thing, too. No, according to Dennis, we were good. So thank you, everybody. And as of right now, no shows are planned. You know, I'm just going through my own little tsunami. So I'll let you know when the next show for another reality show comes up. In the meantime, Monday nights, 8 o'clock, you can find the Mystical Mother show right here. All right, guys, I love you. Thank you for being here. And we'll talk to everybody next week. Have an amazing, enchanted week. Bye.
Good night, everyone. Bye.
Good night.
Love you all. Gotta go.
Bye.
I'm so glad we had
time together.
To have a laugh or sing a song. Seems we just get started, and before you know it.